Please rise. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bratfield, Judge Werfel, Judge Connolly, the Honorable Diane B. Bratfield presiding.
Good morning. All be seated. So, good morning again. This is the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and for the record, today's date is December 10th, 2019. So we have six matters on our calendar today. Four of those are oral, two of those are non-oral. So we will start with the first case. I'll ask the marshal to call the first case for the record.
Case A18-1994, Jeffrey Herman Goldenberg, petitioner, respondent, versus Karen Lisa Yasher, appellant.
All right, and I see counsel are seated at table and ready to begin. I'll make just a few quick remarks before we start, and there are probably things you already are well aware of, but I just want to make sure that you take time to think about it. So as you get to the podium, please take whatever time you need to settle yourself in. So adjust the microphone so that your comments are picked up. Please say who you are and who you represent so that our oral record is clear because this is recorded. And then please keep your eye on the clock so that you watch the time that goes by way too quickly. We do look forward to our conversation with you today. And so with that, counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kathleen Newman, appearing on behalf of Appellant Karen Yasher. Your Honors, we're here today on one very important issue, and that issue is, must trial courts adhere to Minnesota Statute 518-552 when it states that if there is some uncertainty about the obligee's ability to become self-supporting, the court shall make an award of spousal maintenance permanent? That's the primary issue here today. A long line of decisions from this court affirm that when there is uncertainty, the award should be permanent, leaving it open for later modification should circumstances change.
Would you agree that essentially this entire appeal hinges on whether it's a question of when she'd be self-supporting in comparison to whether she'd be self-supporting? And you're advocating it's whether she'd be self-supporting. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the problem I have with that is the amount of discretion we afford the district court judge. And one of the specific findings the judge made is that your client was able to work full-time for 3.5 years while she was experiencing the symptoms. And there's the voluminous information in this record about the symptoms that she was experiencing. And there was also a finding that she was physically active, exercised, engaged in the community, and other information. I mean, that's a pretty specific finding that despite all of the ailments, medical or mental, that she was experiencing, that she was able to work. How do we get around that as far as it being a finding of the district court?
I believe strongly, Your Honor, that the court abused its discretion in making some of those findings, because I don't see that they were supported by the record, except in one instance, some of the testimony of husband's vocational expert made the statements that were reflected in the court's findings. Now, there's
But she did work during this period that she had these issues. Or maybe my understanding of her work history is inaccurate.
No. She had gone back to work when her children were in high school, not as an attorney, but in a nonprofit agency, and she worked for several years. Now, the record is clear that starting, I believe it was 2012 when she started that job at the Federation, that's when these symptoms started. And the record is also very clear that those symptoms increased over the time she was employed there, from starting with some fatigue, starting with some brain fog, starting with cognitive difficulties. And the record is clear that she went to multiple providers without getting any specific diagnosis. Then she got accepted on a consultation basis at Mayo Clinic, where they diagnosed her not just with chronic fatigue, and I think that's important for us to remember here. Her illness is not just chronic fatigue. It's autoimmune disease, it's chronic fatigue syndrome, and there are mold toxicity issues. There's a number of diagnoses. And I do point out that the court really just focused on the chronic fatigue. But when she went to the Mayo Clinic, that's when she got all of those diagnoses. Now, her symptoms had continued to increase. There is no treatment. There is no rehabilitation for chronic fatigue syndrome. Her autoimmune disease was of unknown etiology, although all of the doctors believe that it had to do with some of her genetic issues that makes her highly susceptible to mold toxicity. So what happened over these several years that she is working at the Federation and she's trying to get some diagnosis and some treatment for her illness, it got to the point where she was fired from that job. And it's important to note that the letter that she got upon her firing specifically said that all of the symptoms that she had from her various illnesses, inability to concentrate, inability to follow in meetings, inability to keep her staff and her office organized, all of those reasons were the reasons that she was fired. She was fired because of her health condition.
So, counsel, as I recall, and maybe I'm wrong, so you'll help me out on that, there is an expert, and I believe it was your expert that indicated, however, you know, your statement about the termination letter is what it is, but that your client does not qualify, would not be eligible for Social Security disability benefits. She's not disabled from employment in that sense.
No, in that sense, the Social Security does.
And that was your expert, wasn't it, that acknowledged that?
That's true, and they all acknowledged that because chronic fatigue syndrome has not been accepted as a diagnosis from Social Security.
Well, but as you said, I mean, the testimony, and it was voluminous in terms of what are the symptoms and diagnoses that your client is suffering from, as well as the impact on her employment. I mean, there is a lot of evidence in the record.
In my mind, the evidence was overwhelming, and the only expert that testified that with some tough love and some rehabilitation that he believed that she could go back to work was husband's vocational expert. And I'd like to focus a little on that. Husband's vocational expert was a psychologist. He did not do a psychological evaluation. His report and some of his testimony was replete with his attempts to present himself not only as a psychologist making opinions about her mental health, but as a medical expert. There were several objections when you look at the record to him doing that. The first two, Judge Fraser said, well, yeah, you're right, but I'll let that answer stand, but I'll take that into consideration. The third one, he sustained it. The gentleman was not a medical expert. He was not acting as a psychologist. And look at when you look at his testimony, he comes in with this, she can go back to the Mayo Clinic and she can go to the chronic fatigue treatment program. There is no such program, he acknowledged that. He went on their website.
Oh, counsel, just a second, though, because when your client did go to the Mayo Clinic at some point, I think 2014, do I have that about right?
I think that's about right.
She did receive a recommendation to do a program at Mayo, right?
It's a 3-day education program.
Right.
And it would have required her to stay there.
And she decided not to, and I understand she had reasons for that.
Right. She took that program in the city. She went
to Well, it's a different program, right? Different treatment.
It's a different education
not
program.
Not the Mayo.
No, it's not the Mayo.
Okay. Right.
But she went to the university 8-week program, not 3-day program, and she went to several programs and pathways on how to manage symptoms. And, Judge, that's
specifically chronic fatigue, right?
Chronic fatigue syndromes and any type of fatigue from her other autoimmune illness. I mean,
program is geared, the one that was recommended to her in 2014, is geared toward chronic fatigue and managing those symptoms.
Chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, both of which have that fatigue and brain fog component.
Right.
And it's how to manage those symptoms. How do you manage those symptoms? I think all the experts agree. Exercise is a major component of treatment of chronic fatigue syndrome. She exercises. The judge found that she exercises and seemed to imply, well, being she exercised, she can work. That was part of her treatment regimen. There was concern listed by the court about her mental health. She never made any request to the court that she not be able to work because of her mental health condition.
Are you talking about the depression end of it?
Yeah,
I mean, because you're one of your own experts indicated or thought that she had a depressive personality, and she denied or disputes that.
One of the neuropsychological evaluation by Dr. Furman said on the MMPI, it indicated that she had depressive personality syndrome or symptoms. He did not diagnose her with depression. Her psychiatrist diagnosed her on one occasion with situational depression. Nobody else diagnosed her with depression.
Well, help me out, counsel. Isn't there an opinion from Jan Lowe, the vocational expert, with regard to the cause of your client's inability to work?
Yes.
And relating to depression. I think she specifically linked it to depression, as I recall.
I do not recall that, Your Honor. I think what Jan Lowe said, she relied on the diagnosis from the neuropsychological evaluation that my client
Mr.
had.
Dr. Furman.
Yes, Dr. Yeah. Furman. She okay. relied on that in his findings that she had my client had cognitive impairment to support her opinion that given her health history, physical health history, and her cognitive disabilities as disability as diagnosed by Dr. Furman, she couldn't work. Jan Lowe isn't a psychiatrist or psychologist. She may have referenced it, but she referenced it in connection with the Furman report.
Right, but as you said at the beginning of your argument, the question is before the court today is whether this is an issue where the district court had a basis to find that your client is disabled temporarily but will later be able to work. Whether, when is the dichotomy. And Jan Lowe's opinion specifically seemed to go to that. In that it indicated that her inability to work or disability from work was psychological.
I don't believe that that's what Jan Lowe said, and I, of course, could be okay. wrong. There were
yeah.
a lot of reports.
No, I understand.
Here.
Well, it appears from the way we see the record, we see adverse inferences drawn against your client because she did not necessarily agree that depression was a part of the overall contributor here.
You know, Your Honors, I'm not sure what difference it makes if my client disagreed that she was clinically depressed because her position is, and all of the testimony except for Radersdorf said, depression is not part of why she cannot work. Now, adverse inferences, yes. I do believe, again, the court abused its discretion on that. When you look at the procedural history and you look at the requirements that the judge imposed on her, he had days of testimony and he had trial depositions of experts. And at the end of that, he decided he didn't have enough information. Very unusual situation. Judges are supposed to make their decisions on the record presented before them. And it's not like this record wasn't complete or wasn't overwhelming. But he sends her to his own chosen institution to have an evaluation that the chosen institution would not even accept his order. She had no insurance for this chosen institution. She had no ability just to go there. And by the time we got to the point where...
Did you inform the court of that?
Many times.
Okay. And where would I find that in the record, Ms. Newman?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Where would I find that in the record, Ms. Newman?
That was in both of the motions, the motion, I believe, for amended findings and the subsequent motion for a stay.
Okay, fair enough, but... If that was the case, I would have expected someone to write a letter to the court that, you know, as soon as she, you know, immediately to say, well, I can't go to Mayo, I don't have insurance, et cetera, et cetera. Did anyone do that at the time when your client found out that this was an impossible request by the court?
I don't think that outside of the motion practice or the motion for amended findings.
I did have another question, Ms. Newman. Was there any testimony, I assume from your side, that chronic fatigue syndrome, hope I got that right, is a permanent bar to employment?
No, and it's not a permanent bar to employment because it's a continuum. Some people have chronic fatigue syndrome, and they manage.
Right.
Other people have it, and they don't.
Right.
Some people have chronic fatigue syndrome with no other medical conditions. My client has chronic fatigue, chronic Lyme's, autoimmune disease, on and on. And Judge Breffeld, going to that issue of whether she's going to be permanently disabled or not, isn't that the exact point of the statute, when you don't know if somebody's disability is going to impair them from being fully employed? Isn't that what the statute says? You make it permanent, leaving it open for later modification. You don't put the burden on the obligee to have a temporary award, and this court's line of cases really support that.
I think I'll get in there and defend Judge Breffeld.
I'm sorry?
At the end of the day, there was testimony that supported your side, and there was testimony that supported the other side, and the judge picked the respondent's side. It's difficult for us to, and you know what, had I been the district court judge, I might have granted permanent maintenance, but as I always explain to my clerks, it's not what I would have done, it's not what you would have done, it's whether what was done was error, requiring reversal under the appropriate standard of review. And I guess my concern is, it seems like you're asking us to reweigh the evidence. Now, why am I wrong?
Because all of the evidence,
except for
Mr.
that guy,
Beiersdorf,
right,
a vocational evaluator, all of the evidence, and even the judge acknowledged that she has these illnesses and that at the time of trial, she was permanently disabled. And it's unknown whether or not, even if they're right, and she has some mental health condition that impacts her physical health diagnoses, if they're right and she needs some different medication or she needs some different treatment, we do not know, and that judge did not know, whether or not that treatment would be successful. It's uncertain. And even his own findings indicate that she has these health conditions. So it is, Your Honor, I believe, an abuse of discretion. And I don't lightly ask the court to change the decision of a district court judge.
Well, you shouldn't be ashamed. People come here all the time and ask us to do that.
Well, I mean,
and sometimes we do.
And I think you should, in this instance, look at the overwhelming weight of the evidence.
And counsel, I appreciate your position. And of course, you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal, so you can continue our conversation then. Respondent, we're ready for you when you are ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Catherine Graves. I'm the attorney for the respondent in this matter, Jeffrey Goldenberg. Also at counsel's table is Jamie Driggs, who drafted the brief in our case for us. Your Honors, I think you've picked from the questions that the court has been asking, I think you've touched on all of the issues that I will try to just briefly address in my arguments. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in this case, and there is abundant evidence in the record, including the acts of the appellant in refusing to follow a court order upon which the court could rely.
One that was impossible to comply with?
Right. We don't believe that the record supports that finding, Your Honor. First of all,
does the record support that at the time she was asked to go to Mayo, she had insurance?
She did have insurance.
At that time?
As far as I know, yes. Okay. I believe there's a provision in there for continuation coverage in the original divorce decree.
And counsel, just so the record's clear, I think the argument appellant's making is not that she lacked insurance, but that the Mayo is a provider out of her network, and so it would be an out-of-pocket expense and not an insignificant one for her to go to Mayo. Isn't that the argument?
I mean, she could have gotten a referral from her doctors. She had done it before in the past. She'd been to Mayo in 2014 or 2015, but she chose not to. The order from the court for her to do that came out in November of 2017. She didn't take any steps to try to get into Mayo until, I believe, around August or so of 2018. By then, it was less than a month before our review hearing, and there simply wasn't the time to do it. I also don't believe that it's a credible argument that the expense was too high when she's, spending thousands and thousands of dollars on litigating this case. And had she merely given the court the opportunity to get answers to the judge's questions, we might not be here today.
So that was not a reason the district court gave, right? For about, you know, at the review hearing when the district court evaluated the appellant's compliance with the sort of interim commands or directions from the court didn't say, well, you could have spent your money instead of spending on litigation, you could have spent it on the Mayo. I mean, that's...
The court did not say that, but
So I want to focus on what the court did say, since we were being asked here to affirm or reverse based on what the court did do.
So the
district court does draw an adverse inference.
Yes.
Against the appellant.
Yes.
Now, do we need to rely on that to affirm?
That is one thing the court can rely on, but in addition, Your Honor, in the court's decision from October of 2018, the trial judge made specific findings, and this is cited in our brief, that there was credible evidence that there were psychological issues that played a significant role in Ms. Yashar's inability to work, and that they had not been addressed by appropriate evaluation and treatment. And
so I want to ask you about that. That is a crucial part, I think, of the district court's opinion. So the district court, at the end of the two-day trial, said that it needed additional information to evaluate whether there is a psychological component to the appellant's inability or disability from work.
Correct.
Was there additional information provided by the time of the review hearing leading to the finding that you just indicated?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. We had Mr. Radersdorf's testimony. He is a licensed psychologist. We had the testimony of Jan Lowe, the vocational evaluator, who did conclude in her report that the reason for her inability to work for Ms. was because of depressive and somatization syndrome that she had. That's exactly what the order said. And in fact, I don't believe this is in our brief, but...
This is the part I want you to focus on. You're reciting the record very well, and you, both sides, presented a very detailed descriptions of what's in the record, and it is ample. All right. So, but the district court, as I asked you earlier, did say it needed additional information to make a finding about the psychological component, but then it made a finding at the review hearing without additional information. So is that a problem? Does that mean that the district court's finding isn't supported by the record?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, and why is it?
The reason for is because in addition to the record that the court already had before it, it was able to draw an adverse inference by Ms. Yashar's refusal to comply with its directives.
So we do. It's kind of cyclical in a way, though, and this is what bothers me, is because there's reports that say she has the depression, and then she's told to go and do something, and, I mean, let's face it, in the world of mental health, if you do have mental health issues or you're depressed, it's hard to get off the stick and do anything. So I kind of struggle with an adverse inference. Why should we rely on that if, in fact, she has mental health issues?
Well, Your Honor, in addition to the adverse inference, there was the testimony of Jan Lowe, her own...
But, I mean, there wasn't anything that was demonstrated that she was willfully ignoring the court order or just... refusing to comply as compared to just plain not doing it?
Well, Your Honor, if she did not, for one of the issues, things that she was supposed to do is she was supposed to go look for a job. Because as you pointed out, she did work for 3.5 years during the time that she, but she didn't do that. She made a very cursory...
So the adverse inference is pretty much indifference of what was going on around her versus... her ability to comply, lack of ability to comply.
She had the ability to comply, Your Honor. She chose not to. I just want to point out that there's a neuropsychological evaluation was done by Dr. Furman. His report does make some findings that there was an indication of depression. Back in 2014 or 2015 when she went to Mayo Clinic, there was evidence there as well. She had seen a psychologist, she had seen a psychiatrist, but then she had quit going. It was Mr. Radersdorf's testimony that his belief that her disability was temporary, that she would be able to, if she received appropriate help for her depression and learning to manage her symptoms, that she could return to the workforce. And ultimately, the court...
And this was your vocational expert?
This was our vocational expert, Your Honor.
Does the record indicate how much experience he's had in placing... Well, I don't know, you know, I guess he's not an employment agency, but in dealing with people who have chronic fatigue syndrome?
Your Honor, he did testify about working with... He did not enumerate how many people he had worked with, but he's been doing vocational work for 20 to 30 years, and so he's...
My question is, how many of those 20 or 30 years...
He did not identify how many, but he did speak to the fact that he had worked with people with chronic fatigue and helped them to learn how to manage their symptoms so they could get back into the workforce. He is a vocational...
And then did he say they did get back into the workforce?
Yes, okay. He did testify
to
that.
Did he say they worked as paralegals or lawyers or
office I don't believe he testified as to what type of work they did. Judge Fraser was faced with an abundance of conflicting evidence, and... If you look at his original decision and findings of fact, there's about three pages of findings of all the different evidence that he had to consider. And I agree that this court is not a court, you're not being asked to retry the case. You're to give deference to the credibility trial judge's ability to assess the credibility of the parties.
But what about Ms. Newman's point that, if there is... any doubt, the district court should lean towards granting permanent maintenance, and then, if it suddenly turns out that she's made the managing partner at Dorsey & Whitney, well, then your client can move for temporary maintenance.
Well, Your Honor, I think that probably gets to the heart of why the judge did what he did and the issue and making the decision that she would be able to return to work. Because the problem is that if he get a...
Based on your vocational expert that said, in my 30 years, the few people I've dealt with in chronic fatigue syndrome, few people I've dealt with who had chronic fatigue syndrome, just, boy, oh boy.
Well,
they're the presidents of major Fortune 500 corporations now.
Well, Your Honor, there was also some question about whether or not the level of symptoms that Ms. Yashar was reporting was accurate or not. We had...
At the time of the hearing?
Because
she apparently was let go after working at this organization for many years because, she couldn't just focus on the tasks presented.
I would invite the court to take a look at the letter from the... it does not say that in our opinion.
So clearly,
The Jewish Federation.
Right. Well, so clearly they had good lawyers, too.
I would imagine, Your Honor.
That letter to make sure no one was going to file a complaint under the ADA.
Correct, Your Honor. But I think what...
Well, thank goodness. Everyone has good lawyers in America.
Well, and I hope that our clients did as well, Your Honor.
I'm sure everyone here is well represented.
As far as the concern about whether or not she would be able to eventually return to work, it gets to the issue of who should have the burden of proof. And I think what the trial judge realized, and I'd encourage the court to look at, I believe it's the Myers case and then Madden, which is a recent decision, where it talks about when versus whether. And it talks about the difficulty of that it would have placed my client if permanent maintenance had been awarded. Because when someone is awarded permanent spousal maintenance, they have no duty to rehabilitate. She has no duty to do anything to improve or increase herself, to become self-supporting. I believe there's a quote in one of the trial judge's decisions about, basically not making my client having to prove that someone who was reluctant to return to the workforce had the ability to do so. And one of the arguments that Ms. Yashar makes in her brief is that by granting temporary maintenance, given the circumstances of this case, the court has made it impossible for her to ever come back and request long-term maintenance. And that's simply not true, Your Honor. The court made it pretty clear that, if she had done certain things, for example, if she had tried to find a job, if she had had a psychological evaluation and that evaluation said it had indicated specifically that her depression or whatever prohibited her from working, that he might have been persuaded otherwise. There's nothing that prevents Ms. Yashar from doing that in the future. And in fact, that's what we would assume would happen. She can show us the Hecker case, Your Honor, is a perfect example of that, where someone didn't do what they were supposed to. They were awarded temporary maintenance. They didn't make the efforts that they were supposed to. But the trial court said, well, even if they had, she would still be entitled to some spousal maintenance.
Did you concede that the trial court should have had a reservation of this based on the formula that it, not the formula, the payment schedule that it...
to reserve at the conclusion of the term?
Yes.
I don't believe it was an abuse of discretion, Your Honor, for the court not to do that, because as a practical...
What did your proposed order say to the court after the bench trial? Did it say that the district court should award temporary and reserve jurisdiction, or did it say
it did,
permanent?
We did... What ours proposed, Your Honor, was permanent spousal maintenance in our original...
This is after the two-day trial.
That was after the trial, Your Honor. But I would also say that we had proposed a spousal maintenance mort that was much lower, and it was prior to the judge's decision, which indicated where he had concerns about what, you know, that he wanted to make sure he had the information he needed to make the right decision. And when it became clear that Ms. And it was also before the court had made any findings on budgets, because if... When you look at what the judge did in the final order in October, the trial court did make findings that she would be able to make about $88,000 in 4 years when the maintenance would terminate. And that would be sufficient based on his findings of her budget together with her investment income to meet her monthly needs. So there were facts... in the record to support the decision to make it just a temporary award. And again, nothing prevents her from coming back to this, from coming back and saying that despite all of her good efforts, she has not been able to return to the workforce. So, Your Honors, we're asking the court to affirm the decision of the trial court. It is not the role of this court to retry the case. The court had... I believe there were a total of 8 experts to weigh from. And based on that information and based on his ability to observe the credibility of the parties, and that includes the credibility of the expert witnesses, he determined that Ms. Yashar should only be awarded temporary maintenance. And one last thing I just wanted to point out, too, also, is that Judge Fraser had an opportunity to also observe Ms. Yashar during the trial and whether or not she, in fact, was exhibiting the symptoms that she claimed that she didn't, that she couldn't work. So it's important to consider the ability of the court to observe the credibility of the witnesses.
Appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, credibility of the expert witnesses, if you look at the judge's order, he didn't make any credibility findings about the expert witnesses that I recall. Counsel says that Ms. Yashar can go back with the end of her term of temporary maintenance and she can prove that she can't work.
She has to prove a substantial change in circumstances, right?
Well, what would be the substantial change that she had? Chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic Lyme's disease, and all of these impacted her cognitive abilities and her fatigue ability. I think she proved that at the trial, and the court said notwithstanding her physical health conditions, she could rehabilitate herself in 4 years. Well, how is she supposed to do that? All of the medical experts said there is no treatment for chronic fatigue syndrome. There is a treatment for Lyme's disease, but we all know that it's not effective in every single case. One of the things I would like to point out is this issue about the adverse inference. And I think we need to look at what happened in this case. Both parties made motions for amended findings. Specifically, there was an addressing the issue of getting into the mail, because contrary to what counsel said, my client, long before August, checked into the Mayo to find out if she could get into that program. And the brief outlines all the steps that you have to do. The judge changed, at the motion for amended findings, he changed the deadlines, because I think he gave her like 60 days. He changed the deadlines, I think, from February to May. Really didn't make any difference given what the Mayo Clinic said.
Thank you.
Then she appealed.
You know, I speaking for myself and not my colleagues, I think we all have problems with the adverse inference based on the circumstances that is presented. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, boy, it's, you know, I think I'll just drive down to Mayo Clinic and get something done today. But what is your best argument to reverse?
My best argument to reverse is what the statute says and what the court found.
Would we have to find this vocational expert as a matter of law, you know, not qualified to give an opinion that your client could, you know, easily get a job given these symptoms, or would we say there's not enough evidence to suggest he's qualified to make his opinion? I mean, how would we in fact machine gun the expert witness and make sure it's
even looking at what he said, their expert witness, he said at the time of trial she was permanently disabled. He said she needed a structured rehabilitation program that he thought the Mayo Clinic could give. Of course, they couldn't. But he said she needed to engage in this structured program. And that, in his opinion, at the end of this, then all of her symptoms would magically disappear and she could get a job. That is uncertainty under the law. Even if you found that he wasn't qualified, which I don't think he was, even his own testimony said there's uncertainty here. The program he recommended didn't even exist. The things he said she should do, she was already doing. Counsel said there was discrepancies among all the experts. There wasn't. Mayo Clinic, Dr. Plotnikoff, Dr. Furman, the expert or the treating specialist in Boston, even their own independent medical evaluator said, well, I don't see she has muscle weakness, but that woman didn't even recognize the Mayo Clinic diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome. Then she said she didn't know much about it. Then she said she didn't think she had it. But then she said, but, you know, the real issue is her cognitive difficulty. She needs a neuropsychological evaluation. Their expert said that. Did they get one? No. My client got one. He affirmed that she has cognitive issues that he did not see resolving. Based on that, the court abused its discretion because that any of these experts, even his own findings, it's uncertain. And the law is pretty clear. Myers and Hecker are post-decree matters that are not relevant to an initial determination of spousal maintenance. And so we do think the court has plenty of evidence here to say that this judge, in this particular case, abused its discretion, remand for permanent spousal maintenance. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. This matter has now submitted to this court for decision. We will issue a written decision within the statutory time frame. So thank you.
Thank you.